Welcome to Mysterious Japan, created by Heath Havey and dedicated to the dark histories, ghost stories, and frightful folklore of Japan. These are the stories that give nightmares to the Japanese. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Mysterious Japan. This is Episode 3, Becoming the Suicide Forest. Part 1, An Impenetrable Forest of Mystery. Logging companies in the early 20th century believed Jukai would reap a bonanza of untapped lumber. They began extracting trees, but they soon abandoned that effort. The landscape was too difficult to traverse. Seemingly constant employee injuries caused increased costs, and the process was too slow. Soon, cost escalated beyond potential profits. They abandoned logging. Even now, Jukai remains mostly wild and untouched. Those trekking over its surface soon find themselves caught in a treacherous landscape of slopes, holes, and detritus among uneven layers of lava rock. Fallen logs and trees litter the ground, and roots line the forest floor like veins to trip the unwary. Conifer and deciduous trees grow tightly against each other. Creepers drape around trunks like tightly gripping fingers, and those jutting, twisting, moss-covered roots stretch across the ground in such crisscrossed patterns that they prevent hikers from creating regular paths through the forest. So thick and uneven is this forest that even the most experienced hikers soon find themselves turned around and lost. They lose track of how far they have hiked just 50 yards from the trail. Some say the only way to help avoid this confusion is to walk backwards, tracking and memorizing the way to return. But they warn that this then leads to the danger of stepping into a hole or tripping over gnarled roots. Becoming lost or injured is just one of many unsettling considerations. A noticeable aspect of Jukai is the lack of sound, complete and utter silence. The porous lava substrate absorbs sound waves. This dampens noise and creates a muted ambience. The dense overgrowth blocks wind and noise from outside too. As for those inside the forest, it seems as though sound cannot enter or leave. They hear no wildlife, not even buzzing insects or chirping birds. Instead, they occasionally hear the creaking of trees or the cawing of a rare crow that has flown into the forest. The preternatural stillness and absolute silence creates a sense of otherworldliness. Tour guides leading clients to the lakes or caves in the forest warn that tiny holes in the lava absorb sound. They tell their clients, if you yell for help, nobody will hear you, not even if they are close by. The dense trees also block out most light. Even midday feels as dreary as dusk. Trees and shadows often limit visibility to about 50 feet. The effect of constant darkness is so profound that some plants on the forest floor completely lack chlorophyll and grow entirely white. In Japan, the color white is associated with death and mourning, and these white plants add to the ominous reputation of Jukai. The dense trees also block out the horizon and stars. There is no way to use landmarks to navigate. Mount Fuji should dominate the southeastern vista, but the trees block it from view. The feeling inside is so disconcerting that some report feeling like the lava still moves under their feet. They often feel dizzy or confused. Some scientists assert that this may be related to the piezoelectric EMP fields. These are electric charges in some solid materials, especially hardened lava rock. These EMP fields affect brain activities, augmenting depression, anxiety, and feelings of despair. The magnetic ions and iron deposits in the volcanic soil are strong. They contain exceptionally high iron deposits. Many report that GPS systems and cell phones stop working properly, and batteries of phones, video cameras, and other devices rapidly lose power. Phones would be useless in any case, as there are no cell towers in the forest. A recent study showed that about 10% of the locations studied in Jukai cause compasses to malfunction due to persistent magnetic fields. The rate increases when placing a compass close to the ground. This effect is caused when the compass aligns with the lava rock magnetism instead of pointing to magnetic north. As if these geological and topographical anomalies are not enough, guests walking the main trail see trails of blue, yellow, or white vinyl tape streaking and crisscrossing through the trees, acting as lifelines back to the trail. each extends hundreds or even thousands of feet into the dense forest. Some visitors veering from the main trail attach these tapes to find their way back. Others use the tape because they have come to Jukai to ponder their choices, unsure when they leave the trail if they will return home or become the authors of their own demise within the forest. Too many of these tapes strung through the trees lead to the discovery of bodies. Jukai is, without doubt, a unique and baffling forest. But these very features described above also contribute to the high mortality rate, including suicides, of those who enter. So just how did Jukai come by its terrible reputation as the suicide forest? Part 2. How Jukai earned its reputation as the suicide forest. The end of World War II was a defeat to the morale of the Japanese populace in general, not just its military. After the end of the American occupation, Japanese society came to think that its culture and national consciousness had been rendered dysfunctional by the war. A widespread belief persisted that the increase of suicidal tendencies after the war expressed social discontent. They believed traditional values and norms had disintegrated and dissolved their sense of identity. Suicide rates began to spike in the early 1950s. Then, in 1959, Seiichi Matsumoto published a popular serial story in a magazine, A Romantic Tragedy of Forbidden Love. In 1960, it was compiled into a novel called Naminoto. This is translated as The Tower of Waves. The story develops a highly likable heroine put in an impossible circumstance. She romanticizes the idea of suicide, and Jukai in particular, as the ideal place for such a suicide, a place of contemplation and solitude. The novel ends with the heroine running into the forest in a tragic climax, but Matsumoto never deals with the gruesome realities of suicide, of mental illness, or the after effects of suicide. After publication of the novel, Jukai became a romanticized, albeit misguided, suicide hotspot. By 1970, suicides at Jukai became such a problem that local authorities started conducting regular sweeps of the forest to find and collect bodies. Often, they find suicide notes next to the bodies. Most notes say something like, "I came here because I had nothing to do with my life." During a sweep in 1974, a police officer came across the skeleton of a female stretched out on the ground. As he began to examine the skeleton, he found a copy of Matsumoto's novel being used as a pillow under the skull, still intact, still easily identifiable. He reported that it was common to find a copy of the book with the bodies. And to this day, the book is found among many of the corpses extracted from Jukai. Before long, the spike of deaths led to the forest becoming known as Black Jukai. Then came another book, one that perhaps did even far more damage. In July 1993, Wataru Tsurumi published a highly controversial nonfiction book that only worsened the situation, called The Complete Suicide Manual. It eschews both the pro- and anti-suicide stance, claiming to objectively look at the subject. Tsurumi's position adopted a counterculture perspective. He rejected the Japanese post-war philosophy, commanding them to live strongly. From his self-professed standpoint of neutrality, Tsurumi analyzes various methods of committing suicide. These include overdose, hanging, jumping off a building, jumping in front of a train, self-cutting including both harakiri and wrist-cutting, drowning, burning, freezing, starvation, and more. The impact of this book resulted in many over-the-counter medications being reclassified as available by prescription only. One section of the book states that, out of any place in Japan, Jukai is the, quote, perfect place to commit suicide. After the publication of the suicide manual, police sweeps of the forest unearthed bodies holding copies of this book, often paired with Matsumoto's novel. One additional reason many choose to end their lives in Jukai is unique to Japan. The government bills any costs associated with suicide to the family of the suicide victim. These might include costs like train delays, damage to property, or costs of a funeral. In Jukai, there is very little cost or damage. Thus, an anonymous death in Jukai spares the family this expense. Perhaps even more importantly, Many of the bodies are discovered long after decay has set in or the body has skeletonized. They often remain unidentified at the time of burial. Indeed, many of the skeletonized bodies are indistinguishable from the landscape, and people may walk right by them without noticing. Until 2003, police published the number of bodies recovered by their sweeps. Those numbers rose every year. In 2003 alone, they recovered 105 bodies. Those 105 do not include the corpses of those left undiscovered. Many will never be recovered. The exact number of suicides there cannot be known because they never find all the bodies. In 2004, to avoid sensationalism, troubled governmental authorities decided to stop making the statistics public. Many had made the trip to Yukai like a pilgrimage, traveling from all over the country. The government wanted to stop this. Regardless, the number of known suicides in the general area is reported publicly. It just does not limit its numbers to Yukai. For this rural area with a low population, that number was 182 in 2019 and 181 in 2020, making it per capita the highest rate of suicide in the country. Toru Kurihara is a professional explorer of ruins and strange places. He has explored over 1,500 locations in Japan. He returns time and again to Yukai, where he says he has discovered over 70 suicide victims. Over the years, he has written 5 books focused on Yukai. Toru collected both the available statistics on suicides in Yukai and the exact location where the bodies were found. His data resulted in a startling discovery. The majority of discovered corpses are clustered in a small area within 70 to 100 meters from the main trail and only 300 to 500 meters from the parking lot. To put his theory to the test, he spent 35 days in Yukai over a 2-year period, assisting the authorities with sweeps. He found 37 bodies, more than one per sweep. Of these 37 bodies, half were found within a 100-meter radius. Compiling his results and comparing them with the publicly available numbers, Toru discovered that half the bodies in Yukai are discovered within a 2-acre area. He dubbed this the Danchi area. Danchi is the Japanese term for high-density urban apartment buildings. All but 5 of the bodies he found were discovered within a few hundred meter radius of this Danchi cluster area. He concluded that about 90% of the bodies are found within just a few acres of forest. Toru drew some conclusions from this cluster. First, those despairing and contemplating suicide are not predisposed to extensive hiking, and 100 meters of hiking in the difficult terrain of Yukai is difficult even for those who are not in the depths of despair. Those intending suicide will walk a little way down the promenade, then go into the trees. Second, once they enter the trees, they will feel like they have walked much farther than they actually have. This is a common phenomenon. Many people report feeling that they have walked a kilometer when they have barely walked a tenth of that, and others get turned around in circles without making it very far into the forest. Once they find a place that feels secluded and quiet, they will stop. When Toru spent his 35 days in Yukai doing research, he twice came across someone entering the forest to commit suicide. The first person denied he was going to commit suicide, but Toru saw cigarette butts littering the ground around his feet, and the man stared blankly into the trees. He was rude to Toru, trying to get him to leave. In response, Toru and his companion said they were going to call the police to help him. The man walked out of the forest with them following closely behind. On the second occasion, Toru met a man in his 50s wearing a leisure suit. His face carried a lifeless expression, and the suit was dirty and wrinkled. He held a nylon bag close to his body. When confronted by Toru about committing suicide, the man said, "Please leave me alone. It's okay." After about 5 minutes of conversation, Toru convinced him to go to the nearby store next to the Fugaku Wind Cave. He bought the man water and noodles to eat. This softened the demeanor, and the man opened up. He had been wandering around the forest area for 3 days. He had searched for a job, but none of his interviews worked out. He felt all the work in his life had been for nothing. Toru convinced him his work had been valuable and had been for his family. The man smiled. They eventually called his daughter. A police officer stopped by and offered to take him to meet his daughter. Toru and the officer looked through the man's bag. It contained a knife and a rope. Docile now, the man followed them to the police car with empty hands, but with his head lifted up at last. This man's story is one common to those going to Jukai. A middle-aged man named Taro opened up about his situation. After losing his job at a manufacturing company, he was evicted from his company apartment, drowning in debt and suddenly homeless. His situation became dire.
My will to live disappeared. I lost my identity and didn't want to live on this earth anymore. That's why I went there.
He bought a one-way ticket, then slashed his wrists in the forest. The cuts were too shallow, and he began wandering in the forest for several days. Finally, he collapsed from dehydration, starvation, and frostbite. A hiker stumbled across him as he lay nearly dead. Taro was saved, though he lost all the toes on his right foot from frostbite. Within a year, he made a complete turnaround and became a volunteer credit counselor with the agency that helped him get back on his feet. Taro now dreams of one day stopping the suicides in Jukai, but admits it would be difficult to prevent all the cases here. Japan officials faced troubling statistics. It was bad enough that their country ranked as the 7th highest suicide rate in the industrial world. But even worse, Jukai ranked 2nd in the world for location with the most annual suicides, falling just behind the Golden Gate Bridge. Local authorities knew they needed to enact proactive measures to curb this troubling epidemic. They started by posting suicide prevention signs around the entry points to the forest and along its paths. These signs read,
"Your life is something precious given to you by your parents. Think about your parents, siblings, and children, and do not be by yourself in your troubles."
Recently, due to financial troubles and loan sharks being a root cause of many suicides, authorities posted new signs offering assistance to those who feel they cannot get out of their financial woes. Next, authorities reached out to volunteers to help with sweeps of the area. Not just sweeps to find bodies, but also to find those living who may be contemplating suicide. This volunteer group is called Jisatsu Boshi. This means suicide prevention. Each team appoints a chief and then scours the forest using established protocols. They look for people who do not appear to be regular campers or hikers, such as those unprepared for a hike in the forest. They approach the individuals, ask about their mental state, and encourage them to treasure their lives, observing whether the individual may seem depressed or suicidal. They will approach campers in tents and hikers off the main trail trying, and often succeeding, in saving lives. If needed, the chief stays to comfort the person while the others go back for help. Volunteers consistently reach the same conclusion. Those going to Jukai to commit suicide treat the process like a formal ritual very similar to harakiri. They take many hours to drive, often from distant parts of the country. Then they take many more hours in the forest preparing for the final steps. These delays give the patrols hope to reach them before it is too late. The patrols, like many hikers, find various discarded objects in the forest. They often come across containers which may have held a last meal or drink. Books, wallets, and other objects of personal significance are also common. All too often, they find ropes hanging from trees. But to the patrols, this is a good sign. Bringing things to Jukai means the individual is still hesitant to die, still mulling over that life or death decision. Some may have found new hope for life and returned home with renewed vigor. Part 3. The reality of suicide in Jukai. One local police officer, in response to the romanticized ideal of suicide held by many who come to Jukai, comments,
"I've seen many bodies badly decomposed, and many were picked apart by wild animals. There's nothing beautiful about dying in there. Some bodies are torn in half, and only the upper torso sways, hanging on the rope from the tree. The lower half is just gone, probably devoured by animals. There's nothing romantic or good about dying in there."
Local volunteer fireman Oyamada took charge of the forest sweeps in 2000. In an interview, he said,
"Most of the suicides are middle-aged, although you get a few youngsters, of course. Every now and then, there's a couple who go together, love suicides, as it were. Every taxi driver in this area can tell stories about taking passengers to the forest, knowing they will never return. That's why hikers stick to the other side of Mount Fuji. They worry. They will be walking, along with their kids. And suddenly, there will be a dead man hanging from a tree. I see relatives coming here, looking for dads and sons. I see the anxiety and suffering it causes. It's a very sad situation.
About 70% of the suicides in Jukai are men, and most of those are middle-aged men. They often find they have lost their sense of identity, or they see no way out of dire financial straits. They may have failed at marriage or lost a way to provide for their families. This leads to an influx of suicides during the tax season in early spring. With the problem continuing, authorities decided to put more preventative methods in place. They posted security cameras at the main entrances to track those who enter the forest. Park officials monitor these closely, both in person and on camera, watching for any suspicious or self-destructive behaviors. They also watch for cars left in the parking lot. Abandoned cars that have clearly been there for days signal to police and patrols that they may be too late. Leaves may be spread over the windshields, and in winter, a small layer of snow often blankets the hood. They frequently have license plates from faraway prefectures such as Osaka. Their owners have no intention of returning. But most suicide victims take public transportation. To attack this problem further, authorities increased the number of prevention signs. Authorities also added new signs on the main trail warning hikers against leaving the main trail because it is easy to get lost. Yellow ropes, long chains, and messages forbidding entrance block many side trails. Visitors often pay no heed to the rope or chains blocking entrance to tributary trails. They simply step around them and go deep into the forest. As a final added measure, authorities have taken steps to increase the number of prevention patrols and increased training. They have done everything they can think of to prevent suicide and help those who feel hopeless. The problem becomes so endemic that government-driven public releases discourage movies or television programs that might promote or draw attention to Jukai's reputation for suicide due to the winter. Especially in years of cold weather, most corpses are discovered in the spring when those who died in autumn and winter were not previously discovered. Their bodies thaw, and spring hikers come upon them. The suicide epidemic spiked again during the COVID-19 pandemic. The problem throughout Japan escalates so far that in 2021, the Japanese government appointed the first Minister of Loneliness. His purpose was to reduce isolation and focus on preventing suicide. Hideo owns a lakeside cafe at the entrance to Jukai. He and other local shop owners keep vigilant watch on those entering the forest. In 2011, he disclosed to the Japan Times that he has witnessed many people exiting the forest who attempted suicide but failed. Sometimes, he explained, they were injured or shaken. When he sees visitors alone, he talks to them to make sure they are there for recreational purposes and not due to suicidal ideation. He claims he has helped about 160 people by doing this over a 30-year period. On one occasion, Hideo saw a young girl shamble past his store. A frayed and broken rope swung behind her like a long ponytail. The knot still choked her at the neck. She had tried to hang herself, but she survived the ordeal. Her eyes bulged out of the sockets and deep purple marks ringed her neck. Hideo took her inside to render first aid, give her kind words, and provide some tea to drink while he called her an ambulance. The most common method of suicide in the forest is hanging, but most of those intending to hang themselves in Jukai do not realize how excruciatingly painful death by hanging can be. Those who try and fail need no further deterrent. They will never try to hang themselves again. Most self-hangings do not involve a drop, so the neck is not broken, and death and unconsciousness do not come right away. They can survive up to 45 minutes, hanging at the end of the rope, their faces turn purple. Their tongues press out of the mouth. And in some cases, the clenching jaw bites off part of the tongue. The body thrashes around violently, and in almost every case, The individuals desperately try to free themselves, sometimes scratching at their necks with such exertion that they leave bloody claw marks. Sometimes the bowels and bladder void themselves. The feeling of being choked forces the throat to attempt, unsuccessfully, to cough. The lung makes manic attempts to take in air. The throat feels like it has caught on fire. Those who survive often have lingering effects, such as difficulty swallowing, and they sometimes suffer permanent brain damage. Even worse, at Jukai, most branches do not support much weight. They often crack and break during the violent struggles and manic thrashing. Many would-be suicide victims fall painfully to the ground below, often breaking their legs and dying a slow and painful death very different than what they had imagined. Hideo and other shop owners know what to look for after 3 decades. They typically see middle-aged men not dressed in recreational clothes. Some are even wearing work suits. They often carry a single small bag. Instead of clothes, food, water, or camping gear, the bag usually holds a rope and knife and possibly a copy of the Tower of Waves or the complete suicide manual. Part 4, The Angel of the Forest. In his travels throughout the forest, journalist Ramu has come across many ropes, nooses, and tents. Often, he comes across the despairing souls still contemplating whether to take their lives. He says the sad and tragic state of those who feel they have no options is exemplified in a message one man carved into the tree where he hanged himself.
I'm very sorry to whoever finds me. This is my choice. I will return to my creator. It is not anyone's responsibility. I'm sorry to scratch this big tree. May my body feed it so that it can grow strong. That's all I can do now.
But from the tragedy at Jukai, a hero has arisen. Geologist and volcanologist Azusa Hayano began studying Jukai in 1980. He has spent countless hours in the forest as part of his ongoing studies of its unique geological properties. His specialized work takes him to deep parts of the forest where others never go. Hayano laments that in his decades at Jukai, he has discovered over 100 bodies in various states of decay. The moisture in the air decomposes the bodies to mere skeletons within just 6 months to a year, and most of the skeletons he finds have been there at least that long, undiscovered and forgotten deep in the forest. Hayano recounts his strangest encounter. He found only a skull near a tree. He could not find the rest of the skeleton. Per normal procedure, he brought in the authorities for recovery efforts. They also found no other bones. Given his vast experience at Jukai and his background as geologist, Hayano recognized that something was wrong and there had to be more bones in the vicinity. This was not a case where animals carried off body parts or bones. An intense search followed, but no one could find any other parts of the skeleton. They even dug around the tree to see if the remains were covered or buried in leaves or dirt, but they found nothing. Hayano had to think about this. Something did not add up. An idea finally struck him. He insisted on something extraordinary, something probably only he could have demanded from the authorities with his unquestionable reputation. He asked them to dig under the tree itself. And that was where they found the rest of the skeleton. The large tree had grown over the top of the body. The tree itself was about 50 years old. The remains had been there for over half a century. Hayano realized that what he suspected for many years was true. Anything in Jukai really will be swallowed by the trees and perhaps never found again. He wondered how many remains were in the forest buried by the landscape, never to be discovered. To locals, Hayano is called the Angel of the Forest. The suicides disturbed him so much that he joined the Suicide Prevention Patrol in addition to his geology work there. When he finds living people in torment who come to Jukai contemplating suicide, he tries to talk them into reconsidering. He is credited with saving countless lives since 1980. He recounts a young man he found many years ago. The man had tried to hang himself, deep marks curved around his neck. Hayano says,
"People think hanging is a painless way to die. But this man who tried to hang himself couldn't follow through because it was too painful. Most people succeed when they try to hang themselves because there's no one there to help, not even yourself. But in this case, His rope was too low and his toes could touch the ground enough for him to finally release himself.
Hayano talked to the man for about an hour to calm him down and help him see the value of his life. He convinced the young man never to try anything like that again, breaking into tears. The young man said he no longer wanted to die. Regardless, for the rest of his life, he will have a scar around his neck as a painful reminder of this day. As for Hayano, if he finds the tape stretched out through the trees, he follows it.
You will always find something at the end of the tape. He says sometimes it's a body. Sometimes it's just evidence that someone's been there. But you always find something. If I don't find a body, I just hope they have changed their mind and followed the tape back. At least if they've used the tape to mark their way into the trees, they're indecisive. They may reconsider.
Men, on his thoughts about finding so many human remains over the years, Hayano says,
it makes me feel sorry for them when I think about how humans decompose. It rots and then starts to stink. Before it rots, parasites will hatch and the flesh will gradually disintegrate. I think it's impossible to die heroically by committing suicide.
When he arrives on the scene too late and finds a body, Hayano sits next to it and gives a moment of consideration for the individual as a human being.
You think you die alone, but that's not true. Nobody is alone in the world. We have to coexist and take care of each other. No one dies alone out here either. Flowers or mementos are sometimes brought by family or friends and left at the place of death. We all have someone who loves us.
Continuing suicides at Jukai are a sad reality, but there are worse things that happen in the forest. We will explore those in the next episode. In episode 4, we go further down this rabbit hole, past the suicide epidemic, and recount tales of murder in the forest.
This has been Mysterious Japan, created, written, and translated by Heath Havey. Thank you for listening and making this podcast possible. Please visit our website at www.themysteriousjapan.com for more information. Please join us next time as we continue to explore the dark histories and strange mysteries of Japan.